start. I'd like to welcome you to Tuesday evenings at the Modern. I'm Terry Thornton, Curator of Education. So glad to be here and so glad to be here with you tonight on the occasion of this lecture. If you don't know about Tuesday evenings, I see a few new faces in the crowd. If you don't know about Tuesday evenings, I invite you to go online and look at the lineup. It's been fantastic. We're off to a great start. Last week we had Katie Patterson here. The talk was absolutely phenomenal. I really recommend that you get online and look for the podcast, because I think hers will translate particularly well into the podcast. And she's just amazing. Big, big brains. And of course, she has the Focus exhibition that is here, which was the occasion for her talk, and that reflects the big brains as well. You're really going to want to see that work. It's beautiful and smart, you know, the whole package. Let's see. Next week, I'm very excited. We have Byron Kim here. He's known for his kind of minimalist yet representational paintings of, the minimalist looking paintings. It's all skin color, skin tones, which was a piece that was shown in one of the Whitney biennials that kind of, I think, launched his career. It's when I became familiar with the work. More recently, he's had a show at Jim Cohen's where he's done these gorgeous paintings of the night sky, again, that read as kind of color field paintings, but are in fact coded to the night sky. So I invite you to come back next week for Byron's lecture. And also, kind of serendipitously, I didn't realize, but Byron Kim is very close friends with Glenn Ligon, which, of course, is the exhibition we have upstairs. And in fact, Byron has interviewed Glenn on occasion, and one of those interviews is reprinted in Glenn's book, Yourself and the World, Selected Writings and Interviews, that is the subject meeting the evening of Thursday, March 15th. So I invite anyone who's interested in that reading group to visit again the website and learn more about that, and to sign up for the reading group. Tonight, we are fortunate to have artist and writer Jill Magid here to share insights into her fascinating work and practice. Many of you may have followed Jill's most recent investigation body of work, known as Failed States, which has manifested as exhibitions at the Berkeley Museum, Art Museum, and Art House at the Jones Center in Austin, continuing to be a source of curiosity and inspiration with a coming book on the subject and by the same title, as well as other projects to follow. So this will be Jill's fourth book to date, the others being One Cycle of Memory in the City of L, 2004, which I see here. And I believe might be available at the end of the lecture if you're interested. That was actually a second edition, was printed in 2011. Lincoln Ocean Victor Eddy, which was printed in 2007. And Becoming Tardan, printed in 2009, which is also here and available tonight. Jill received a Master's of Science in Visual Studies at MIT in 2000. She was artist in residence at the prestigious Rijksacademy in Amsterdam in 2001 to 2002, and has been recognized with awards and grants, including the Netherlands American Foundation Fellowship Fulbright Grant. Jill's work was included in the 2010 Free exhibition at the New Museum, and her most recent solo exhibitions include, as mentioned before, Failed States, which just closed this past Sunday at the Austin Museum of Art, Art House in Austin. Closet Drama last year at the Berkeley Art Museum, Matrix Program in Berkeley, California, of course, and A Reasonable Man in a Box in 2010 at the Whitney Museum of American Art, and in 2009, Authority to Remove at the Tate Modern in London. Also, Objects to Be Handed Over or Destroyed at Yvonne Lambert in New York, and Thicker Than Glass at Yvonne Lambert in Paris. An impressive career, to say the least, for just over a decade, actually. And by all accounts, there is nothing slowing Jill Maggott down. In fact, she seems to be gaining speed. She is very ambitious. She seems to have an insatiable practice that seeks mystery, exposes secrets, and offers questions rather than answers, as is evident in the work. For example, the opening line in Jill's book, Becoming Tardan, which was included in the description of tonight's talk because I could not resist. It's so beautiful. The opening line being, "The secret itself is much more beautiful than its revelation." If that's not enough, I think you will be impressed tonight with what you're about to see in the presentation embedded. So with that, and without further delay, please join me in welcoming Jill Maggott.
Hi, thank you, Terry, for inviting me and for such a nice introduction. I'm just going to get right to it because some of the projects that I'm showing have quite a lot of stories behind them, so I think you'll get a feel of what I do from me actually showing you the work rather than me describing it beforehand with what I do. So just one thing to say that I work in multiple media, really depending on what the system is or the concept is that I'm working with, and writing is a big part of that practice. And so now I will just begin, and I'm going to be showing you mainly four projects. Actually five, but you'll see. Okay, so I'm going to start with a piece called Evidence Locker. Evidence Locker was commissioned by the Liverpool Biennial in 2004. The idea with this biennial was that artists were asked to somehow respond to the city of Liverpool. And previous to that, with works that I'm not showing, I had been engaged with different police departments in different cities, in first a kind of guerrilla-style approach. And after doing that, I started thinking about this dichotomy between artist and police that I had learned about historically, that it was kind of this cat and mouse situation. And I started thinking about what happens when I get permission to do things instead of just trying to do them on the sly and seeing the reaction, and what happens if myself and the system, in this case the police that I'm working with, become mutually vulnerable. So the piece Evidence Locker started when I started researching the police in Liverpool, and I found out that at the time of 2004, the city of Liverpool had the largest video surveillance program in the world. So in the city center alone, there were 242 surveillance cameras, and they filmed the city in real time, 24 hours a day. And that first day remained in real time, and after that day, the video footage went to 3 frames per second. And after 31 days, that footage cascaded off the system and was forever erased. The only way to get access to that footage was if the police removed it and put it in their evidence locker, or if a citizen wrote a subject access request form. And a subject access request form is the legal document that says who you are, what you were wearing, the time of day, the incident that happened. And you had to send a picture and a check. And by law, the police had to search you on their computer system. And there was a loophole in the law that it never defines an incident. So me going like that is an incident. So I went to Liverpool for 31 days, and every day I wore red, and I wrote a letter to the police in the form of a love letter, answering every criteria of what was necessary to find me on the footage. So this was the first letter. Dear Observer, make me a diary and keep it safe. Take care, it is mine. Hold this photograph of my face. Keep all of our entries in order. Put the letters in your desk file and the images in your evidence locker. You can edit everyone else out. I'm skipping down. Don't worry about finding me. I will help you. I will tell you what I was wearing, where I was, the time of day. If there is anything distinguishing about my look that day, I will make sure you know. Hold on to my diary for at least 7 years. That's the statute of limitations. I am enclosing a check. Use it for whatever expenses you have. Sincerely, Jill Magid. And what happened is that they got really into it. And they started following me all the time. So when I would walk down the street, every single surveillance camera would start turning. And I started hanging out with them at night. And I have to say that I never told them I was an artist. So I never misrepresented myself. But I never told them I was an artist. And that comes from work that I'm not showing tonight, in which I was hired by the Dutch police to cover their surveillance cameras with rhinestones. And I had learned that when I presented myself as an artist, that immediately people or institutions had ideas of what an artist was and judged me on that. But if instead I called myself a company or a researcher or didn't call myself anything at all, that they didn't know what to make of me, and so they'd actually listen to what I was proposing. So with Evidence Locker, I simply wrote the letters, and to be honest, I was hoping that maybe I would get a minute of footage, but in the end, I got 14 hours of official police footage, and many of the shots come with halfway through the time there. I would hang out with them at night, and I taught them about Godard, who's my favorite, or one of my favorite directors, and specifically the film Contempt with Brigitte Bardot. And I tried to teach them how to film me like her. And it did get to the point where they had me on speed dial, and they'd be like, "You just walked way too fast for that shot. You need to..." And so it was pretty interesting. So one of the final days I was there, I was in Liverpool's a really interesting city in terms of its pedestrian areas, that in the city center, there's a lot of areas that are held just by pedestrians, and they're highly surveyed. So I was standing one day in the center, and I knew that like three or four cameras were watching me, and without really knowing why, I had this desire to close my eyes. So I just stood there for a minute closing my eyes, and later on I went to hang out with the cops at their secret control room. And when I walked in, they were like, "Oh my God, we were so freaked out when you closed your eyes, because, you know, if something happened to you, we couldn't protect you." And I said, "Oh, that's interesting. Why don't I get a microphone and I'll hide it in my hair behind my ear, and if you ever need to talk to me, you can speak to me. I just have a little favor. Could you just record it on my dictaphone whenever you do that?" And they said, "Okay." And so the video I'm showing you is called Trust, and it's one of four videos that I made from the video footage. It's filmed entirely by the police, and it is their voice. It actually is not edited at all. And it was the day that I asked one of the cops to lead me blind through the city. This is supposed to just start on its own. Oh no, I'm on the wrong slide. Sorry. I've never done keynote before. Okay, so yeah. Okay.
Hi, Jill. Where are you? That may be very difficult, but we'll try it. Well, I'm away, I'm quite away from you. I'll just zoom in on you. You can't see the wire. Yeah. I am. Right, okay. Do what you want to do. Are your eyes closed? Yes, at the moment. There's several people approaching you. Quite a lot of people, actually. Just be careful. There's a little old lady in front of you. To your right. No, you carry straight on. You're going to your left, Jill. You're veering off. Stop, Jill. Right, turn right a little bit. Right, that's better now. Now you're back on course again. And walk straight ahead. Now, stop again. Stop. You're veering left all the time. You're done. Try it again. Yeah. You're getting a few strange looks, but... Yeah, that's fine. It's really amazing to see people's reaction. Yeah, you're fine, you'll keep on going straight. There's no one in front of you. Lots of people about, but funny enough, there's no one in front of you. Yeah, that's fine, that's great. I'll try and zoom in a little bit. There's quite a few people around you now. Yeah, keep on going, you're okay, it's fine. Now you're veering to your right now, Jill. Can you turn left a little bit more? That's it, that's fine. And walk straight again, that's it. Excuse me? Stop it. Can you go left a little bit again? That's it. That's right. That's great. Yeah. Left a little bit more, just a touch. That's it, that's smashing. Looks good. There's a lot of people around. Looks really good. That is a nice shot. Left a little bit more, Jill. Oops, excuse me. Just stop for 1 second. Right, so let me have a look in front of you what's happening. Right, just turn to your left slightly. Right, now walk straight. Walk straight on now. Yeah, that's good. That's good. You're good, that's good. You're right in the centre. Little girl with a father in front of you. Oh, they've missed you. That's good. Yeah.
Okay. It goes on for 18 minutes, so so I'll finish there. So then the last video that I made is called Final Tour, and that was the last day I was there, and a lot of the cops were really into motorcycles, and so one of the cops... came to my house and picked me up on the motorcycle, and then six other cops were on all of the other cameras, and he filmed me going through the city, passing by a number of different cameras, and that video is in the time lapse, because I got that DVD later, and then I over it runs Godard's theme from Contempt, the love song. And we literally ride off into the sunset. And so the way it was shown at the Liverpool Biennial, this was at FACT, and the bag with the boob on it is not mine. It's Yoko Ono's piece. But this is the reading room, and this was the first book that I made, and it's called One Cycle of Memory in the City of L, and it is the collection of the 31 letters that I wrote to the police. And so that's a reading room that they're reading it. And this is an example of a video that I didn't show you, a two-channel silent piece that goes from morning till night from all different days of when they were following me. The next piece I'm going to show you is a more concise, or less epic piece. It was called Auto Portrait. Oh, actually, it's about my death, so it's pretty epic, I would say. Auto Portrait Pending is a piece that I did that I was researching diamonds, and I found out that there is a company called Life Gem that makes diamonds from dead people. I don't know if you've heard of this, where you can either send them the body or you send them cremated remains, and they make a real diamond from the ashes of the body, real enough that they send it to the Gemological Institute of America and it's graded. So I made